Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, joined by Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. That's how you call us. Or hit us up on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. As the NFL playoffs and the Giants offseason rolls on, we're almost done with that dreaded bye week before the Super Bowl, and then we can start getting the guys out down in Houston and talking some football again and getting ready to play some football in what should be a good game between the Falcons and the Patriots. And, Paul, we'll take 5 minutes here off the top, and then we'll get on to your calls. And it'll be mostly your calls today, folks. We'll also be joined by Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com and SNY at 12:30 to talk about the Senior Bowl and wrap up practice there. But the Pro Bowl's this week, Paul.
Yeah.
I will fully admit it, and if you go to the fact or fiction written version of the website, you will see my lack of enthusiasm for the Pro Bowl and my answers to the Dan Salamone fact or fiction questions. I don't care. I probably haven't watched a Pro Bowl in about 8 or 9 years. It doesn't get me going. It's not football to me. It's flag football, and it doesn't do anything for me.
It's not much different than what we see at training camp these days, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah,
with
but
you.
At least in training camp, you're building up to something. This is just like
yes.
a whatever at the end of the year.
You know, I don't take it seriously. Let
you
me
watch
say
it
that,
though, right?
But I do watch it.
I know you do. That's why I want to talk to you about it.
Not from start to finish.
Okay.
Okay. I will not watch the entire four quarters wire to wire because it does get rather tedious and monotonous. And of course, there's rule changes where you don't have the blitzing, you don't have the double coverage. They if the team is down by two touchdowns and they score, they get the ball back again. They don't play by real rules. They change the rules in the game too.
I didn't even realize those are the different rules. To be honest with you. I didn't
yeah.
even know those.
Yeah.
Well, I knew about the non-blitzing. I didn't know about if you're down two touchdowns, the team that scores gets the ball again.
I think that's still in effect. They've changed it a couple times over the years.
Are you happy they're back to AFC-NFC rather than
oh, I'm
the
thrilled.
Draft?
That's big. That's a big rule change for me.
Big, folks. Big.
Last year, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie had to guard Odell Beckham Jr.
See,
on a play.
That's fun. What's wrong with that?
No. They got to do it in practice because they're trying to get themselves ready for a meaningful game. If you're doing it in Hawaii in a game that means nothing, I don't want them doing that.
What if you're doing it in Orlando in a game that means nothing?
I feel the same way. The point is, it's not out on the Giants practice field preparing for a real game, so they should not be guarding each other. So I love the NFC-AFC rule change. I'm big time up in favor of that. And yes, John, the two things that I do watch the game for, there are two things. One is I absolutely want to make sure that I don't see anybody get hurt.
Well, I can always check that report afterwards. But yes, I agree that is the most important thing.
Because who's the Patriots running back who got hurt while practicing for the Pro Bowl in a flag football
How
game?
I remember this, Paul, I don't know. But I do remember it was Robert Edwards.
There you go. 1,000-yard back.
I know, and that was like 10 years ago. Why I remember that, I don't know, but I do.
So during Pro Bowl week, they had a flag football game on the beach, and he wound up ripping up his knee.
I saw
that. And in fact, wasn't last year, a tight end got hurt in the game last year? In the game,
yeah,
actually, got hurt in the game.
That sounds right. I don't remember
was
who.
It Gresham?
It
was
didn't
it
end up becoming super serious, so I don't
no,
think, right?
No,
right.
He turned out he didn't miss any time during the season or
right.
anything. But I think he might have been limited during minicamp. I'm pretty sure there was a tight end last year who got dinged up. Was it Kyle Rudolph, maybe? I don't know. Here's my point. I do watch for that. I absolutely watch for that. Second thing I watch for, and I know you guys are going to laugh and you're going to say, well, you know, it's not real serious. It's not real competition. Look, there are sometimes, especially because it is an offensive-minded game and the rules are as such and there's not a lot of tackling, sometimes you do see some pretty cool plays.
All right, that's fair. And here, Dave did a good job getting the rule changes up here. Wow, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Oh, there are. There's a ton of them.
No motion or shifting by the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Offense must always have a tight end. You can only have one or two receivers on the same side on the same play. You can't intentional grounding is legal to
yes.
protect the quarterback. You cannot run a 3-4. You must run a 4-3 at all times, but you can run cover 2. No press coverage except inside the 5-yard line. No blitzing. You're not allowed to rush a punt, kick, or field goal, point after kick. 2 timeouts per period. Teams trade possessions after each period, except the start of the third period when the team that lost a coin toss can receive or defer. No kickoffs, including free kicks. Teams just start their own drives at the 25-yard line. 35-second play clock instead of 40. And that's pretty much the most important one.
Yeah,
there's a couple other ones here. But
I don't see
else
the points
really
one
showing
in here. Maybe they got rid of that now.
Maybe they did, yeah.
Now that they're back to AFC, NFC, maybe they got rid of the
now
points.
Now, that's just changes. So maybe those weren't.
Ah.
Maybe that was from last year. I don't know.
So anyway, those are the two things. Injuries and then just simply put, some spectacular plays because these guys are still great athletes.
Did you watch the skills challenge last night?
I was busy doing college basketball.
I did not watch it either. I forgot it was on, and I tried to find a replay of it, and they did not replay it today. But I saw some of the highlights. The coolest thing looked like the dodgeball. Did you hear about that?
There was a drone skill, too.
Yes, where and Odell Beckham did win that.
Okay.
Where he caught a ball, I believe, from 125 feet, dropped from a drone. But he lost the one-handed catch competition to Jarvis Landry, believe it or not.
And that is going to be a point of contention with him and Landry for years to come.
Yeah, because they're best friends.
They are best friends.
So they might end up doing that again at another Pro Bowl down the road.
They might even have a pay-per-view next month.
So I'm not sure. Hey, Dave, was that dodgeball thing part of the skills competition, or did they just kind of do that separately? Okay, so that apparently was part of the skills competition.
Okay.
So they basically played dodgeball. And it was like, you know, each team put five guys out there to play dodgeball. And the NFC killed the AFC. T.Y. Hilton was by himself at the end. It was like 5-on-1. And he ended up knocking, I think, 2 NFC guys out before he got up.
But how does dodge – I get the one-handed catch, and I get maybe the big ball drop from high in the sky. But how does dodgeball equate to football?
It's fun.
Okay.
It's fun. That's how it equates to football. Football is fun.
I'll tell you what. If they had a field goal competition for non-kickers, Beckham would have won that.
All right.
And you and I both know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He boots 40-plus yarders at practice all the time.
It's unbelievable. It really is. Yeah, and, you know, it's a shame. The only thing you don't like is all these guys that aren't playing. I mean, the AFC is missing. There's no Khalil Mack, no A.J. Green, no Antonio Brown. Bunch of other guys, no Marcus Peters. There's a bunch of guys that aren't playing in the AFC and in the NFC too. So you get the only good thing is that you get a lot of these guys to kind of hang out with each other. And I think that's what the players like the most about the Pro Bowl, to hang out with your peers, have some fun, and kind of get to know the other guys in the league a little bit up close.
Yeah, interesting thought. Ralph Sindrich, the former superpower agent in the NFL for many years, he and I are Twitter pals. And he put up a comment the other day, which I thought was cool. He said, you know what? Those poor people in San Diego are going to lose the Chargers.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been a shame, or wouldn't it have been a nice thing to do? And, of course, sponsorships, and there's no way they were going to pull the game out of Orlando. I mean, Disney wanted the game, and there's a reason for that. But, wouldn't it have been cool to postpone the Pro Bowl till after the Super Bowl, allowed all the Super Bowl players, if they wanted to play in it.
And do it in San Diego.
And had the game in San Diego a week after the Super Bowl to give the San Diego people one more chance to see the NFL.
I think that's good.
It's a nice thought.
But I think
never
one of the reasons that San Diego's not going to get a Super Bowl anymore, which is one of the reasons why
facility
the Chargers are leaving, is because
great.
Of the facilities, which is why the Pro Bowl probably wouldn't be there either.
No.
So you put all those things
together.
He was
thinking about the fans.
Of course, no. And I think that makes a certain amount
of sense. It's a nice thing to say.
All right, people, thank you for joining us on Twitter. We appreciate it. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. 12:30, Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com and SNY will be joining us to wrap up the Senior Bowl. But, Paul, between now and then, why don't we do some phone calls? How does
Let's
that
do
sound?
It.
Let's start off with Joe in Pennsylvania. He will get us up next here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Joe, thanks for leading us off today. How are you, pal?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. It's hard to see, seeing that the season's over. It's like we're on a bye week yet. Just can't believe it. You know,
it's a long bye week. It's about 6 months long.
Tony, you know there's only one consolation here, and I want you to try to put this into your thought processes. Even if the Giants had gone all the way to the Super Bowl, it only means that the offseason is shortened by 3 or 4 weeks. The end of every NFL season is inevitable. John will tell you, I don't like it very much, but it's going to come one way or the other, just like the tax deadline every April. It's going to be there, and it's not going to go away.
Maybe we can bring back the World Football League or something.
Well, I was a big USFL guy, but that's another story.
You know what? I actually enjoyed NFL Europe when it was around for those few years. I actually watched a little bit of NFL Europe. Not a lot, but I did watch some of it.
I did. In fact, I did stats. Papa was the play-by-play guy for the team here that played at the Meadowlands.
And you did stats for him, right?
And I did stats for him that year.
Really?
And the quality of play was rather
diminished. NFL Europe.
They called it World, NFL World
League. Yeah, well, I think before the World League, you had NFL Europe.
Correct.
Or was it NFL Europe after the World League? I forget.
No, it was NFL World League, then it was NFL Europe.
Europe, right.
But the World League, we had a team here called the New York, New Jersey Knights, and they played at Giant Stadium. Reggie Williams, the old Cincinnati Bengals veteran, was actually the GM of the team. Papa did the play-by-play. I did stats for him in the radio booth. And the only thing I would say about that is that the play was really poor. The USFL was the finest, in my opinion, non-NFL football league in the world. And it's a shame that Donald Trump had to ruin it. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, what I want to just say, looking back on a season, you know, we had a great season, and I'm looking at, you know what I mean, we came a long way to compare to last year, how much we need it, really and truly, I think. And, you know, I really do think, you know what I mean, that the defense will be all right this year. If we lose a guy or two, you know, we will pick somebody up. I do believe we'll be all right there. And it's just really, like, I like to see, like you would, Paul, too, is we did a lot of passing, and let's try to get that offensive line and a running back and the fullbacks, and let's try to be more that running team, the power team first, and
Joe,
have the receivers and have to go to the
Joe, here's the bottom line, and I know a lot of you guys talk about be a power running team first. If you're running the West Coast offense with Ben McAdoo, they're not going to be a run-first power running team. It's just not going to be what the team's going to do. Now, Ben McAdoo wants to run the ball. He wants to do well at it, and he wants to be balanced. But you're not going to see a team like Dallas this year that ran it more than they passed it. It's just not going to happen.
No, that won't happen. I'm with John on this one. I would only say this, Joe. As you know, I advocate a power running game. The point is you have to have one.
Correct.
Doesn't mean it needs to dominate your attack.
Right.
Right. I agree.
But you have to have one.
Right, but if you have the blocking tight end in there and the big powerful running back or the fullback, you know what I mean. You can do either or, you know. So really, you're keeping them a little bit more honest, the defense, I believe. So we tried it the other way; it didn't work as good, and it gives Eli more protection. So, you know, I think we'll be fine in the draft. Whatever we get, tight ends, running backs. The offensive line, and I, you know, McAdoo, boy, you look at him, a young guy, how much he puts into it, you know. He don't even finish the game after a victory. He's on to the next one. So, you know, so that's all I wanted to say. I think we're in good hands. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
I think one of the things that I'm most interested in, and it kind of goes to Joe's point, John, and we may not know the answer to this until maybe even training camp opens, and maybe not even then. It's one of the biggest questions I have about the Giants roster in 2017. And it's not even about free agency, and it's not even about drafts. I'm curious to know, is Ben McAdoo going to want a fullback on this roster? Will he be okay with Will Johnson as the / H-back, tight end, fullback? Is that going to be sufficient? Is that going to be enough? Or is he going to say, you know what? Last year we missed that fullback. The hybrid isn't enough. We need to go get a real fullback. I'm really curious because there are teams, including the Cowboys, and as you mentioned, they primarily rely on the power run game. They use their fullback. That's a big question for me.
And look, you can use the fullback in the West Coast offense.
Yes, you can.
Just look where Mike McCarthy came from with the Green Bay Packers.
Cool.
They used John Kuhn. They used Ripkowski this year.
Yes.
And go back to the, you know, George Seifert and Bill Walsh 49ers with Tom Rathman back there fullback. So there is room for a fullback in the system. So you're right. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they want to utilize a guy at that position specifically. By the way, in 1991, Paul, the New York, New Jersey Knights went 5-5, first in the American East, but they lost to the London Monarchs in the playoff semifinals.
I told you we worked in the booth. I'm telling you.
See,
I remember it. They had their black uniforms, black and silver uniforms.
Also the Knights,
and
that makes
Mouse
sense.
Davis was the head coach.
Oh, and Mouse Davis. He's actually a long litany of people that follow him that became
no
NFL
question.
Coaches.
An offensive innovator.
Anyway, NFL Europe came right after World League. World League was 89-98. NFL Europe was 98-2007. Yeah. Thank you, Dave Dominic. Always doing a good job that day.
And
Dominic,
you know what? I don't remember any players on that team. That's how poor the quality of play was.
Let's go to Travis in Queens. He's up next. Travis, thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you today?
Good, good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, Travis. Hi. How are you?
Very good. I was calling because about the draft coming up. I was hoping that the Giants, you know, move Eric Flowers to right guard. Last time I spoke to you guys, you said, you know, we need a right tackle. I mean, a left tackle, a tackle, period. So my question is, let's say we at 23, and at every spot that we need help in, considering I know free agency will help us out a lot, but let's say at every position that we need help in, whoever's available at that position, that's the best player, who would you guys take? I hear the tight end from Alabama. He's pretty good. So let's say he's there along for the tackle.
If all things are equal, Travis, which, by the way, is not going to be the case on draft day.
No way in the world.
Yeah, right. But in your theoretical world, we'll play your game.
Okay.
If it was up to me, and you have guys of equal value at every position, you could pick any position you want, I think you pick an offensive tackle. But if you lost JPP in the offseason and he did not re-sign with the Giants, I think you have to consider a defensive end. And I agree with you. I think the Howard kid from Alabama is excellent. But if I have the choice between him versus an elite tackle and an elite pass rusher, I would pick the tackle or the pass rusher first.
I'm with John on this one. If JPP is gone and they don't supplement the defensive end spot via free agency, and the need is equal, and the players on the board are equal, the defensive end spot and the offensive tackle spot would be my toss-up. And then there'd have to be an intangible there where I pick
right,
one or the other.
I agree.
I would not pick the tight end.
Now, we agree?
We do. But we also agree O.J. Howard's not going to be there at 23.
Boy, and I'll tell you what, we had John Ledyard on yesterday. I want to talk to Tony about it. Then we have him at 12:30.
Right.
And I asked him about Howard, and he goes, look, we knew in Alabama he could block in that system, and we knew that. At the Senior Bowl, he showed that he almost wasn't allowed to show off all his receiving skills at Alabama because of their system.
Right.
And he helped himself at the Senior Bowl, and he's probably going to do well at the Combine too. So he could very easily be a top 15 or top 20 pick
yeah,
and be gone before the Giants pick at 23.
Exactly.
But if he's ever there, that's someone I would certainly consider because he's going to be a heck of a two-way player.
The name that I heard this week, and I forget who it was on Sirius NFL Radio, had mentioned him in comparison to was Greg Olsen. And that's a pretty lofty comparison.
Yeah, because Greg Olsen can do both.
It's a pretty lofty comparison. Although I think Olsen's a better pass receiver than a blocker.
I agree with that, but he's good enough as a blocker.
He's good enough. He's good enough. And if O.J. Howard is that type of comparison where they're starting to think about him in that breath, does he get by 17, 18? I doubt it.
Right.
Okay. What else you got, Travis?
Okay. And one more thing, right? Just a football question.
Sure.
So if you got at Montana, Brady, Rodgers or Eli, all right? Based on their career, well, not based on their career, because Brady, I think, will be number one. But my question is, who you think would be not the best, but who would you guys take out of those four?
For playoffs, regular season, overall, what can you give me an idea?
Playoffs and no, matter of fact, let's go playoffs, regular season.
All right, well, I'll give you both rankings for me. If we're talking about everything and I'm deciding between those four guys, I would take Tom Brady first. I would take Joe Montana second. I take Aaron Rodgers third, and I take Eli fourth.
I'm just going to say Brady, and I'm not even going to bother with the rest of them.
I mean, Montana's pretty damn good, too.
I can't go against Brady.
Oh, no. I'm putting Brady first on my list. You heard me.
However, I'd like you to let me go off the board and take Johnny Unitas.
Oh, okay. Because the reason why, because it's like sports center and everywhere else you turn to, it's about the Brady, the Patriots. And I'm like, Brady been like, more than I think it's the system. Like, he perfects the system to a T.
No, but Travis, here's the thing. Tom Brady is the system.
Exactly.
He's not exactly. a product of the system. He is the system.
He's the heart and soul of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's not like they have some type of system where guys just get open easily and he's making these easy passes. Think about it, Travis. He's gone through his 15 years with the Patriots. Do you know how many different guys he's played with at running back, offensive line, receiver, tight end? There's been a merry-go-round of guys, and it doesn't matter who's there as his weapons. He's throwing 35 to 40 touchdowns with less than 10 interceptions and 4,000 yards every single year. He is a freak show when it comes to his ability to mentally prepare and execute a game plan. And, you know, me and Paul talk to Kevin Gilbride a lot because we work with him on our college football schedule. And the one thing he talks to us all the time about, it's not about arm strength. You know, accuracy is important. But you know what's important? It's being able to see and being able to take what you see, evaluate it in your head in a split second, and make the right decision. There is no one I've ever seen better at the quarterback position at doing that than Tom Brady.
Well, and that's why Peyton Manning is so great, because he's not the most physically gifted guy who ever played, but he's in the greatest of all time conversation because of this.
Yeah.
You know, and remember this too. Many times when the Patriots changed personnel on offense, people thought it was a downgrade. They thought these receivers weren't as good as last year's. These running backs aren't as good as last year's.
Didn't matter.
This offensive line isn't as good as last year's. What does he do? He gets it back to the Super Bowl. Look, it's disgusting, okay? But no, I'm kidding, of course. But honestly, to answer your question seriously, I saw the end of the last part of Johnny Unitas' career. I also know a lot of historians who have great respect, who I have great respect for, who tell me about when Johnny U was in his prime. I've also seen lots of game tape on him, film of him. To me, Johnny U was so many decades ahead of his time.
Correct.
Because he was the first ever truly cerebral quarterback who could do everything with an offense and basically have it all up here. And so to think about a guy who is ahead of his time by decades, that to me gives him such an extra bonus that I, you know, it's hard for me to let go.
Johnny U is kind of like the Babe Ruth of the NFL.
Yeah.
He changed the way the
no
game
question.
Was played.
The whole two-minute drill was Johnny U.
Yeah. Go ahead, Travis. I'm sorry. We kind of got sidetracked.
I'm sorry.
You.
That's all right. It's cool. But my thing is with Brady is the only quarterback in a football league that goes into the season giving 8 games to 6 winning. Like so therefore, and 9 out of 10 times he wins, what, we give him 7 games in his division that he may win. But it's like he's given that, so now he's positioned himself to get the #1 seed every year. Like, the Patriots is like the Cavaliers right now in the AFC East. Like, I mean, AFC period.
You do realize that the Jets made the 2 AFC championship games while Tom Brady was doing his thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get you.
You're telling me the division is weak, and so he gets a lot of wins by default. But, you know, I'm going to add one other thing here, and it's an off-the-field factor. But if you talk about the embodiment of what Tom Brady brings to the Patriots, don't forget, and Lance and I talked about this the other day, and it's important to remember, and we often forget it, he takes significantly less money because he helps open up the salary cap for the Patriots to surround him with better quality role players.
Remember, he lets his contract be designed so that the cap hits less.
Correct.
He still gets his money.
Oh, he's cashing.
Yes.
He's cashing, but it's done in such a way that he helps the team. When his cap hit is like half of what the top 10 NFL quarterback cap hits are, it's ridiculous. Okay.
But those 4 Super Bowls that he won, 2 of them wasn't by the first 2 was field goal, and it was defense. He had a defensive team better than an offensive team. And
the first one, that's true. The first one, yes, he was carried by the defense.
Right.
No argument. The 3 after that, he played a big role.
And that Seattle game, oh my God, that was the worst Super Bowl.
Travis, hold on for a second. Do you want me to figure out a way to take away Eli Manning's two Super Bowls by taking away the Tyree miracle catch and the two fumbled punts against San Francisco? Because I could do that with any player in the league that's won titles. I can take away two or three plays and take the Super Bowl away from them.
That's not fair.
That's not how it works.
It's not fair, Travis. It's not fair. You obviously don't like Tom Brady, and that's okay because he's in the majority.
Well, yeah. And look, I don't have a Tom Brady jersey hanging out of my closet.
Nor do I.
I don't. But – Respect.
No question. And by the way,
no one's given wins in the division either, by the way.
Yeah.
You earn those wins.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, when I talk about number one all time, I'm talking Johnny U, talking Brady, I'm talking Peyton Manning.
Montana.
To me, I'm still putting those other three guys ahead of the rest of the field. But that's just me.
I'm surprised you're that down on Montana. I know you're not down on Montana.
No.
I'm surprised you don't have him in that same area. You think he was a product of the system?
I just think, you know, there's that certain elitist group that's just a little bit above. That doesn't mean Montana's not great and awesome. It just means to me he's not Johnny U.
Okay, I want to squeeze in Vince here, Dave, real quick before we get Tony up. All right, line four. That's Vince in Pennsylvania. Vince, what's going on?
Hey, guys, two things. First one on a Giant, second one I'll take off the air.
Sure.
The first one I've been wondering for years now, and I don't know whose fault it is, and I know we run the three receiver all the time, but our main run play is shotgun draw.
It's not always a draw, though. People think it's a shotgun draw. There's a dozen different types of running plays and directions you can run out of the shotgun. It's not always a draw play.
Well, I agree with you. I see what you're saying, but they're all out of a shotgun. We don't run single back like ever. Or even, like, sweeps, for that matter. I mean, it's just something that's bothering me because you see it gets stuffed a lot, and it's, like, 3rd and 12, and I know a lot of teams do it because they think they're going to get a break open, and you're doing that shotgun draw or counter, whatever it is that you're doing, and it drives me nuts.
You basically want the handoff coming from the quarterback over center is what
sometimes
you're telling us.
And that's fine. I think, Vince, that's fair, and I think you could see that more, and I do think – you can run things like the one thing the Giants don't do out of the gun. They don't run any stretch plays. When's the last time the Giants run a stretch play out of the gun?
No.
You can do that from under center, though.
Yes, you can.
Tiki Barber.
Sure, you can.
That was how long ago was when they used to run that with Tiki Barber.
Here's what I just would like you to do. Just take a breath on this because Ben McAdoo was a rookie head coach last year, albeit third year as the OC or kind of OC. I mean, he did call the plays, so he was kind of the OC. Even though Mike Sullivan had the title. Third year calling the plays here. I still believe that as a rookie head coach, there's a lot that Ben McAdoo had to learn and had to learn on the fly with this year. And John and I both heard him at the end of the season talk about things that he had to evaluate, things that he had to look over again, things that were going to be potentially tweaked. Let's see. Before too many people try to, you know, go after him and say, oh, you made this mistake, you made this mistake, give the guy a chance to go through some of these things. I think he's gone.
Did we lose Vince?
Thanks for the call.
Sounds like we lost Vince. Thanks a lot for the call, Vince. We appreciate it. And now we'll be joined by our guest today, and that's Tony Pauline for DraftAnalyst.com and SNY. He, of course, keeps up with us during the draft season, and he just got his way home from Mobile, Alabama. Everyone stays for the practices, gets the hell out of Dodge before the game starts. Tony was one of them. Tony, thanks for giving us time today. Hope you had a good time down south.
Oh, it's nice to be back, both literally and figuratively. But, yeah, it was a lot of work. It's actually the second trip because I was at the Shrine Game practices the week before. Senior Bowl's a little bit more intense. They're 15-hour days, but learned a lot as far as the players are concerned and what's happening in the world of the NFL draft as far as buzz is concerned.
Now, I'm not surprised. The Player of the Week award that was given from us on Giants.com for players at the Combine, I'm sure it's shared by a lot of people out there. O.J. Howard showed that he can pretty much do everything as a tight end, didn't he, Tony?
Yeah, he was fantastic. If you read my preview, I said this was a big week for him because I thought it was going to determine whether or not he's a bottom half of round one guy or he could be a top 15 pick. And I'm really leaning towards the latter. He did drop a few passes, and he had a bad fumble yesterday, the last day of practice in full scrimmage, which has been a concern throughout his career. But the fact is this. I mean, he looks like a 6'5", 255-pound smooth Cadillac the way he moves down the field. He catches the ball in the short field with defenders draped on him. He makes contested receptions. 25 yards down the field, and he's a really good blocker. I talked to him about the lack of production, and he said, listen, Alabama was primarily a running team, and when they threw the ball, they threw it mostly to the wide receivers. So, you know, he just did what was asked of him. But this, I mean, from an athletic point of view, from a football skill point of view, this guy has it all at the tight end position. He's just got to work on his hands, and I think that may just come with more repetition.
I'd like to build off something here, Tony. When talking about Howard, as John just alluded to, he was in a system at Alabama which clearly emphasized more of his run-blocking skills. So what I'm asking you is here, how many star-caliber guys, real quality, high first-round guys, are you looking at that are projections? Because maybe the system in college didn't allow them to showcase their best traits. But because guys have seen them at the Senior Bowl practices.
And we'll see them at the combine.
They're going to say, well, wait a minute now. It was the system that held them back. This guy should be a top 15 pick because we think he can do this really well.
Well, yeah, it's not only that. They may project him higher because they think that they're going to do better in their system. So it's not only what they didn't do in college. It's what they can do at the next level. And that always happens. Listen, as I tell people all the time, you know, whether it's, say, like a Christian Hackenberg last year or a player that goes much earlier than is expected, football coaches do exactly that. They coach football. And when they see a guy like O.J. Howard, who's 6'5", 250-plus pounds, you know, plays to a 4'6", catches the ball in the crowd, they'll say, you know what, we're not going to worry. We'll watch the college film, but we will coach the best out of this guy. That's what we get paid for. We're paid to coach this guy, to coach him up, and that's why you see oftentimes players being taken much earlier than people project, because the coaches think sometimes they're right about it, sometimes they're not right about it, and that's why you have your bust. They think, you know what, I'm a football coach. I'll coach this guy to be the best he can be.
Tony, it's interesting because that's exactly what happened with Odighizuwa out of UCLA. When the Giants drafted him in the third round, he was primarily a run-stopping defensive end. You know this with the Bruins. And the Giants, they were under the impression that he would be a much, much better pass rusher than what he showed in college.
That hasn't happened yet.
And to this point, he's had a lot of injuries, and it's really not developed that way. But that's the kind of guy you're talking about, right?
Exactly. And you know, I'm take blame for Odighizuwa, too, because after they drafted him, I was on your show gushing over him,
saying that's right,
he got a steal in the third round. He did have a major hip injury in college. You know, maybe it's just not it should have been a good system fit, but what happens also is sometimes these guys just get by so easily on natural talent on the college level because they are so much better than the guy they line up they're lining up across from. All of a sudden on Sunday, the guy they line up across from is better than them on a weekly basis, and they got to take it up a notch. And sometimes those guys just don't do it or can't do it.
Yeah, Tony, one guy I think is interesting now is at the Senior Bowl is Desmond King, a guy who had a ton of production in college, was a cornerback for Iowa, led the nation, I think, in interceptions as a junior, and now he's graduating as a senior. Some people think he's going to be a safety. Some people think he can be a zone corner but doesn't have the speed to be a man-to-man corner. How'd you evaluate his work this week at the Senior Bowl?
Well, he was inconsistent. I mean, he made some nice plays, and then he got burnt down the field by Zay Jones of East Carolina, who's a mid-4-5 receiver. So, you know, like he's been really the past two seasons, he was up and down during the Senior Bowl. As I reported yesterday, there are some teams who in Mobile have already taken him off the cornerback board and placed him on the safety board.
Wow.
Because they don't think he has the flexibility, don't think he has the speed to be a cornerback in the league, and he's going to be a liability in deep coverage. You know, it's if you watch Desmond King as a sophomore, as I did, he looked like he was going to be a top 15 pick.
Yeah.
His game has kind of leveled off, even regressed in certain areas, and there was a lot of inconsistency, and that's what we saw the past 3 days of practice.
All right, I got to ask you, because I do games, John is also on my crew at the Northeast Conference in FCS football, formerly 1AA. Cooper Kupp, the wide receiver out of Eastern Washington, is a guy who intrigues me because he's stepping up in competition, but my goodness, look at the production. He looks smooth when you watch him in practice, and quite frankly, he's one of those skyscraping type receivers with a big wingspan that perhaps might interest the Giants. I'd love to get your thoughts on him.
I think that everything we saw from Cooper Kupp the past 3 days matched the film. It wasn't an aberration. He was a terrific route runner. He was, as you said, very smooth. He played with great balance and body control, was able to separate from the defensive backs in both one-on-ones as well as scrimmage, caught everything that was thrown in his direction, and caught it correctly. Doesn't let the ball get inside his body, extends his hands and looks the ball into his frame, lifts the ball into his hands away from his frame, which the coaches love. I mean, he's not a deep threat. He came in a little bit lighter than people thought, under 200 pounds. But, you know, he's still a young guy. He's got time to physically mature. You know, sometimes what you see on film doesn't match the player because it may be the system, it may be the competition. Wasn't the case with Cooper Kupp. Everything that you've seen the past 2 years from him at Eastern Washington, he displayed during the 3 days of Senior Bowl practice.
How high do you think his value is then? Is he a first-rounder?
No way. I don't think he's got the size, speed numbers to be a first-rounder. I think somewhere in that mid-second-round area is when teams will start to consider him.
Yeah, that's kind of where the Giants might be picking in that second round.
We had a guest on yesterday, Tony, talking about the running back class in the draft. You know, everyone talks about Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey and, you know, Leonard Fournette and all those guys. But, you know, he really loves Jamal Williams, who was one of the stars out there at the Senior Bowl this week out of BYU. He thinks he's right in the category with some of those other guys. What was your impressions of him, and where do you see his draft stock after a week in Mobile?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to go back to Jamal Williams. He was tremendous early in his BYU career. Then he had an injury, entered the season with basically grades from NFL scouts that were comparable to the fact that he wasn't even going to get out of May camp. Had
wow.
a great season. He had a very solid Senior Bowl. He was good running the ball on the interior. He showed, as I wrote, he showed some perimeter speed and quickness that I was surprised that he had. Did a terrific job catching the ball out of the backfield and gave effort blocking. I mean, they do these blitz drills. I don't know if people saw them, but they do these blitz drills, which is what happens in games where the linebacker or the safety gets a 15-yard running start, and then the running backs or the tight ends or the fullbacks have got to block them. A lot of guys got run over. Jamal Williams didn't. He did a solid job with it during the blocking drills. So I think overall, he's a good package. He's a complete player. There's nothing great about his game. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be an early round pick. I think he's more of a rotational type of back.
Okay.
But I think he's got the tools to play on Sunday.
Yeah, which of course may be of interest to the Giants, because I think they are going to be in a position to have a backfield rotation once again. I think Perkins is going to be better paired with somebody than having somebody be the primary guy. Tony, I want to go a little bit off the board here because this guy's not at Senior Bowl practice this week, but Wisconsin's Ryan Ramczyk. From what I understand, the offensive tackle prospects, there may be a bunch of second, third, and fourth round guys, but first round guys, really maybe only two in this entire draft. I don't know if you agree with that, but a lot of folks have told me that, and I can understand why. Now, Ramczyk, because of that hip labrum surgery, not going to be able to do anything for 4 months. What is the conversation about him? Have the offensive tackles this week at practice enhanced their value that maybe some other guys may sneak into the first round? What's it look like now?
That's a good question. First of all, I think there are three first-round offensive tackles. Cam Robinson of Alabama, Garrett Bowles of Utah, and then Ramczyk. The thing about Ramczyk is he's only really played 1 year of division of 1A football. I mean, he was a transfer from Wisconsin Oshkosh, or one of those Wisconsin schools, and played this year. And he did a very good job. When I watched him on film, he needs a lot of work. Mm-hmm. He's got great upside potential, but you can see the athleticism is there. You can see he basically moves his feet well. He's very good blocking in motion, but he needs a lot of work on his body. He's not overly strong at the point of attack, which is where I think the hip labrum injury is going to hurt him, because now he's going to be 4 months behind in training. You know, these guys, usually when they're done with the season, they take a week off, and then they start training for the combine. They start doing all the weightlifting, the jumping, and everything else. He's behind that eight ball, which I think is going to not only hurt him in the draft, but it's going to hurt him as a rookie in the NFL, because he's one of those guys that needs that training to really develop his body, to improve his strength, to improve his bulk, really turn that soft flesh into muscle mass. So I think it hurt, and I think teams know this, that the 4 months off where he's really not going to be able to do a heck of a lot of squatting and leg on his work on his leg strength is going to hurt down the road, so people may ease off on him. Now, as far as tackles who could be – we're at the Senior Bowl – who could surprise late in round one, I don't know the Giants would take him. They may trade down to take him. Remember the name of Antonio Garcia from Troy, especially if you watch the game this weekend.
Okay.
Played left tackle at Troy. He's a guy who has that ability to hop into those last couple of picks of round one. He's a tall guy at 6'6", just under 300 pounds, very athletic, very smooth, tremendous in pass protection. I was talking Carolina Panthers offensive line coach Ray Brown on Tuesday, and he was gushing at the way Antonio Garcia uses his hands, gets them up properly, places them into defenders, because a lot of college linemen, they just lean on the opponents. They don't block with good
sure.
fundamentals. Not Garcia. He needs a little more experience, but listen, he is a tremendous pass-protecting left tackle who has a lot of potential down the road as a run blocker, and he's a...
Did we lose him? Did we lose Tony there, Dave? Why don't we get him back up? All right, we can get we'll get Tony Pauline back up in a second. We lost him there for a second. That was actually somebody, Antonio Garcia. We had John Ledyard on yesterday.
Shut up.
That was a guy that he pointed out, too, that he thought was a real rising prospect from a small school of tackle. Given the paucity of players at offensive tackle, he might be a guy that could sneak into that first round.
Well, to enhance what Tony said while we dial him up, John, started the first six games of the season at left tackle as a redshirt freshman.
Now, Troy's a small school, but still very impressive.
And then all 12 games at left tackle as a sophomore, 12 games at left tackle as a junior. I take it he probably did as a senior,
yeah,
too.
I would
imagine. So he would be experienced. And that's a good thing because it would mean he has taken a ton of snaps over 4 years at the spot. Do we have Tony back?
Yeah, we have Tony back. Tony, you were at the tail end of your Antonio Garcia description. So why don't you just finish up on him for us?
I am intrigued, Tony. You got me curious.
There you go. He's a tremendous pass blocker. He's got all the skills to be a starting left tackle in the NFL. He just needs to get a little bit stronger, physically mature, to improve his run blocking. Really a nice kid. I got to spend some time speaking with him. I don't know that the Giants take him where they're at, but he's one of those guys I think could slide in, you know, the late first round. There were a lot of surprise picks. You want to trade down and take Garcia there because he's going to be off the board in the first few selections of round two.
Tony, two other smaller school offensive linemen that were at the Senior Bowl that I want to talk to you about. One kid is the kid Lamp, who played tackle in college. Some people think he's going to move inside. He got hurt that first day of senior practice. The other one is Taylor Moten out of Western Michigan. He was a guy that our guest yesterday spoke pretty highly of. How do you see those two guys projecting in the NFL after their work in college at some smaller schools?
Lamb looked like he was on his way to solidify himself as a second-round pick when he after the first day of practice on Tuesday.
At guard or tackle?
He played both. That was the amazing thing is everyone's projected him to guard, but the fact is when he was used at left tackle during Tuesday's practice, he held his own. He did a good job.
Okay.
So it's all in the eye of the beholder. I mean, there were some people like me that say if a guy can play left tackle, it doesn't matter if he's under 6'5". You keep him at left tackle because it's such a priority position.
Sure.
Some teams will like him at guard, but he showed on Tuesday he can play left tackle. A lot will depend. You're going to draft him as an offensive lineman. It's sort of like a Justin Pugh sort of situation. You know, you draft a tackle, you leave him at tackle. You know, you can kick him into guard if he can't handle it. So I think Lamp can play either. As far as Moten's concerned, Moten was dominant when he lined up at right tackle. I mean, he was just devastating people. He is a powerhouse. He's a big man who plays big football. When they slid him over to left tackle, he really struggled. He got exploited by edge rushers. He didn't show the footwork. He didn't show the agility. So Moten is a guy that if you're going to draft him, you're drafting him solely as a right tackle, maybe kick him inside the guard, which he played a little bit on the last day yesterday during practice, and he did a good job.
We've heard too much about right tackles and left tackles in these parts, Tony. I don't think we want to talk about guys who can't slide to the other side. That has been an issue around here for a little while. I'd like to ask you, if JPP were to leave the Giants via free agency, and there are certainly a lot of folks who think he will get a boatload of money to go, the Giants need to figure out what to do with that left defensive end position. Now, they've got Romeo Okwara, who I'm sure you had some scouting stuff on last year when he came out as an undrafted rookie free agent. They've got Odighizuwa, who has been a disappointment to this part. Do you think that the Giants can get enough potential out of those guys based on what you had seen in college? Or do you think there is a prospect or two that they might be looking at here in this draft if they decide to go that way to enhance the position?
Well, I mean, I'm going to err on the side that, I hope those guys, knowing what I watch both of them, and the Notre Dame kid is just someone who's going to get better with experience and as he physically matures. He made major leaps. I mean, I saw him at the Shrine Game in 2016, got my years mixed up, where he was just getting torched, and then I watched him during the year, and it was a major development. So you have to think that the arrow is pointing up for him, and you hope that somehow Odighizuwa rebounds. But even with that, you know, you can never have enough good pass rushers.
Right.
And one area where this draft is strong is pass rushers. I mean, if you're looking in the third round area, you're looking at a guy like Dwayne Smoot of Illinois, maybe Deshaun Hall in late second round from Texas A&M. Everyone talks about his teammate Myles Garrett, who's probably going to be the first pick of the draft. But Hall was a terrific college player in his own right. Really had two solid days of practice, a natural 4-3 end. So he's the guy in round two if you're looking for somebody like that. I mean, even later on, you'll be able to get a good pass rushing defensive end. Keontae Davis, a small school kid out of Tennessee Chattanooga, who showed really well at the Senior Bowl the first 2 days. He's a fourth round type of player, 275 pounds, 6'3 and change, natural edge rusher, good speed off the edge. Showed some surprising strength and some bull rush moves. You know, we'll need some time to develop, but if you've got a nice rotational system, unless there's a stud who you didn't expect to be staring you at the face in rounds maybe two or three, he's somebody that you take in the last day of the draft and you work him in with the other guys.
Last couple of questions for Tony Pauline, draftanalyst.com, and, of course, SNY as well. Tony, everyone talks about what a great edge class this is, and that includes both 3-4 defensive, 3-4 outside linebackers and 4-3 defensive ends. Are we looking at a higher volume of the stand-up rushers out of the 3-4, or are we going to have enough guys that even on first and second down can put their hand in the dirt here and not only handle the pass rushing duties of a 4-3 defensive end, but also set the edge and play good run defense on first and second down?
Yeah, I actually think it's the former, and really, you look at what happened this week at the Senior Bowl. You had guys like Terrell Basham of Ohio. You had guys like David Rivers of Youngstown State. You had a guy like Carroll Phillips of Illinois. Undersized college defensive ends that terrorized quarterbacks on Saturday were used as stand-up outside linebackers, and they did a good job standing up or rushing the passer. So I think there's what I'm seeing from this class is more of an inclination to take those guys that are a little bit smaller but also very athletic and use them as stand-up pass rushers as opposed to consistent 4-3 defensive ends because of the fact that they struggle out of a three-point stance holding the point against the run.
Okay, so they're kind of tweeners. Paul Dottino loves tweeners.
Oh, my loves goodness. Tony, I'm allergic to tweeners. I absolutely abhor keep them away from me. I'm a 4-3 standard defensive end guy. You better be about 270 for me to want to look at you in the draft.
Well, the thing about it is this is, you know, the tweener was you were too small to play defensive end and
right.
You were too slow for linebacker.
Yeah, now they're these fast enough, though, to do it.
Yeah, these guys are not slow. These guys,
yeah.
I know. Can run. They can run the length of the field. It's just a matter of they have to learn to make plays moving in reverse and with their back to the ball.
No, I understand. I had one other thing from me. I don't know if John's almost done, but I wanted to ask you about the quarterbacks class because we have gotten a ton of calls on this show about people saying, who's the next quarterback going to be after Eli Manning? Because Ryan Nassib is a free agent. I'm sure that Josh Johnson is probably, well, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but I don't think he's likely to be back. And people say, should the Giants start looking for that quarterback of the future now in the draft? I'm of the opinion if they wanted to hold off for a year and sign a veteran stopgap backup, they could do it and maybe shop for the future quarterback next year. How do you see it?
This is not a good quarterback class. So, if you're going to get a quarterback of the future and you're the New York Giants, you're going to hit pay dirt in the last day of the draft with a guy like Davis Webb of Cal, maybe C.J. Beathard of Iowa. The talent at the top does not excite me. It's very thin after your first two or three guys. So the quarterback of the future for the Giants out of the 2017 draft, you know, see who they select in rounds 4, 5, and 6, only because there will be better players at positions of need. And I'm not a need guy. I'm a best player available
right.
guy. But there will be BPAs, best player available, in round 1, 2, and 3 for them.
So you probably wait to 18 if you're going to draft the quarterback of the future, correct?
Well, it depends on, you know, where you land in the draft. It also depends on who's staring you at the face. I mean, if they think a guy like Webb, who I just mentioned, Pat Mahomes of Texas
yeah.
Tech, he's an intriguing guy. I mean, if he's staring them in the face in round 3, they may say, you know what, let's take a flyer on him because we'll have a year or 2 to develop and we don't have to, you know, throw him into the fire. I mean, it depends on who's on the board when you're selecting. I just don't see any first or second day quarterbacks that may interest the Giants at this point, especially since it's not a major need.
Right. Final question for me, Tony, before we say goodbye. We're joined by Tony Pauline. Anybody jump out at you that maybe we haven't heard of heading into the Senior Bowl that you watch this week and you're like, ooh, this guy's on my radar now. Let's see what he does at the Combine, and maybe he'll be able to make some noise.
Well, not really, because I've watched most of these guys for 2 or 3 years, so
right.
I'm just familiar with all these players going in. But I'm going to tell you, a local guy to keep an eye on that I've written about all week, I'm sure he's going to be a monster in the game tomorrow if you watch the game, Hassan Reddick of Temple. Here's a guy who, entering the season, didn't even have a grade from scouts. They had nothing on him.
Wow.
I mean, basically, he didn't exist. He had a tremendous senior season, basically as a defensive end, 3-4 pass rusher, 22 tackles for loss, 10-plus sacks. He went to the Senior Bowl. I mean, as a pass rusher, he was destroying the opposition in blitz drills. He took Adam Biswanati, who's a highly rated tackle, made him look foolish out of a 3-point stance. But then he got better and better as the week went on in pass coverage drills. He was starting to make plays, and if he wasn't making plays, he was right there almost making the play. And the one pet peeve that I have is guys who can't turn around and find the ball in the air. He was getting his head back around. He was facing the action. He wasn't doing a lot of face guarding. So,
wow.
Again, you know, if the Giants are looking for a linebacker type in that second, third round, Hassan Reddick, you know, is really developing into a complete three-down defender. Watch him tomorrow. I think he'd be wearing number 58 if he keeps his jersey number. A guy who had a terrific senior season. And like I said, you know, when the scouting grades came out in June, Hassan Reddick was not there, which meant that the NFL people thought that, you know, he wasn't even getting an invite to camp. And now he looks like he's going to be a second-day pick.
Out of Camden, New Jersey, you said he was local, and that's some certainly within the state. Good stuff.
And Tony, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I apologize ahead of time, but Paul and I have a connection to one of the FCS players.
Oh.
That was a late invite to the Senior
Bowl.
Yes,
we do.
He's also a Pennsylvania kid, so I know you're probably familiar with him. Lorenzo Jerome, who's a safety out of St. Francis.
St. Francis, sure.
He made a lot of plays. He's a punt kick returner. He made a lot of picks during his career at St. Francis. He was a late invite, had a big game at the NFLPA Bowl a couple weeks ago. What did he show going up against some top competition in Mobile?
Well, he didn't embarrass himself, and he looked like he belonged, which is important for a guy like that.
Way to go, Lorenzo Jerome.
I think he's a little bit limited in the sense that he's more of a downhill, between-the-numbers type of
yes,
guy. He's not a roaming free safety. But that's okay, and you know what? If he shows well tomorrow, one thing that they don't really do during the week of practice is they don't do special teams for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. They don't practice, you know, running down the field, returning, and things like that. You know, a lot of guys have made a lot of money. Antoine Randle-L comes to mind. I know that's high up there, but a lot of guys have made money at the Senior Bowl in the game because of their plays on special teams. So if he shows well returning punts, if he does well on coverage units, and then he has a good workout at the draft in Pro Day, I don't know that he's going to get a combine invite. You know, all of a sudden, those late picks in round 7, he puts his name on the radar. Some team's going to take a flyer on because of the versatility.
Can I have you for one more second, Tony, if you have it for us? I just want to ask you now, give me, if you can, I don't know what the updated numbers are over the last couple of years, what percentage of guys in the Senior Bowl get drafted, East-West Shrine Game as well? And I know the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl has been coming on the last few years. What are we talking about here in terms of guys who are legitimately draftable players?
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers, but going off the top of my head, since I've been to every Senior Bowl's pad practice since 2000, I would say a good 85 to 90% of
right.
the guys who are invited and practice at the Senior Bowl eventually get drafted. The Shrine Game, it's probably about half that amount.
Right. Okay.
Good stuff, Tony. We appreciate it as always. You're a good, loyal friend of the program. Thanks a lot, and we'll certainly talk to you more down the line as we get some more information and we get closer to the draft taking place at the end of April. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
Our good buddy, Tony Pauline. He's a good dude, and he does a fantastic job. We love Tony.
Well, look, when you love your stuff, you know, it's really easy to bring the passion, and, you know, that's great. And, I tell you what, to think about that now, since 2000, he said?
Yeah.
Every practice at the Senior Bowl week, I mean, that's a lot of football.
And we'll see Tony out at the Combine as well, which should be a lot of fun.
Good stuff.
All right, final call before we say goodbye. Tony in Hoboken was holding, and we'll take him now. Tony, thanks for closing out the show for us today.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Tony. How are you?
Good. I just had a quick question. Just wanted to know what you guys thought on a guy by the name of Darryl Verhees that we signed to a futures contract. He's from Trenton.
Yeah.
Supposedly he's all over YouTube. He ran. I saw it on YouTube that he ran a 4.22, and he looks like a beast, and he's fast.
Well, he is fast, he's fast, and his workout numbers are phenomenal. His official 40-yard dash time when he tried out with the Colts was a 4.3. He was an undrafted free agent with the Ravens last year. So he has some physical skill. He has some speed. You want to roll the dice on him? I think it's a good idea. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know what I mean? Actually, that's pretty much all. That's pretty much all I had. I mean, I also just wanted to mention now, I've been calling in a couple of times now, and I really respect all you guys. I love you guys. I love this show. I love 12 o'clock.
Thank you.
hope to talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it, Tony. Thank
you. Please call again.
All right. All right.
I thought you were setting up a butt there somewhere along the way. You guys are the best, but never came, though. I like that.
It did not. I thought he was going to say, I disagree with everything he's saying.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was a shame so many guys bailed out of the Senior Bowl this year. You know, and you know what really confuses me? And I think I brought this up on a show earlier in the week, and this will be the last thing I say before we say goodbye. I get if you're a position player, you're going to be a first-round pick, you want to get hurt. I get that. If you're Deshaun Watson, and you're trying to prove to people that you can handle an NFL offense,
yeah.
If you don't want to play in the game, fine.
Why not go during the week?
You're not going to get hurt at practice as a quarterback. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, why not go there and see if the Browns, who are coaching one of the teams, and the Bears, who are coaching one of the teams, mm-hmm. both those teams could be in the market for a quarterback.
Agreed.
Even if you're not going to be a top 10 pick of theirs, maybe you're going to be their second round pick. Why not go there, get coached by one of those two teams, and have a chance to put in a really good impression? And then maybe the team loves you. Because apparently he's a really good kid. He's a really smart kid. He graduated in 3 years. Why wouldn't you want to go there, put your best face on, and then maybe one of those teams would want to draft you a second or third round and perhaps maybe be their quarterback of the future? That to me confused me. I didn't get that.
Yeah. If you really believe in yourself and you're confident, then you have to think you can only help yourself by going.
And you're not
going
to get hurt in practice if you're a quarterback.
Should not be any downside unless there's something about your game that you're really worried about that you don't think is up to speed.
Or maybe he was hurt or something like that, and maybe there was an injury he was trying to get better and he wants to be ready for the combine.
And
who knows?
That's always possible. Yeah. That's why I have a hard time getting on a guy.
No, I'm not killing him.
But from afar, you do have to weigh the pluses and minuses and look at it with a little skepticism.
Paul, we'll see you on Monday.
Absolutely.
That's Big Blue Kickoff on this Friday on Giants.com. Thanks to Paul Dottino. Thanks to Tony Pauline. Thanks to Dave Dominic. I'm John Schmelk. Have a great weekend, everybody. Pro Bowl is Sunday night. What time is the Pro Bowl? Anybody? 8? Sure. 8 o'clock.
Prime time, baby.
Tune in. We'll see you then. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.